So am I still waiting?
Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Riegel.
You can see that Goldberg certainly respects Riegel. Very cautious to this point.
I'll tell you, Tony, Riegel doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say he's trying just about everything, and I think Riegel looks perplexed at this point. How about that? Riegel kicked him in the face as he was backing up. Now that's going to make him angry. Would you expect anything less from Riegel?
Well, Riegel wants him to make a mistake. There's no doubt about that, but I don't know if I want this guy to make a mistake on my body.
We talked about it being one of his toughest tests, and so far it has been just that. It has been a different test for Goldberg. Back to the arm again. You can tell that Riegel is straining to get every wrestling move he can on this powerhouse.
Goldberg trying to fight back.
Tried a spinning neck breaker, did not really connect the way he wanted to.
Riegel. European uppercut in the corner, and open hand palm thrust to the side of the face. Now that one, I think he laid in a fist, open hand to the midsection, and a headbutt.
Well, we are seeing much more of a wrestling match than we anticipated, guys. And that was based on solely Goldberg's stellar track record so far.
I'm just, I'll get your Walkman back to you. I'm just going to transfer all my cassettes.
Oh, shit. Take it to you.
You could fucking keep it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's your Walkman.
You probably have more. I've never touched that thing in like 15
Well, after these tapes, years. I don't know what use I'll have for it either.
Maybe you'll start. Maybe you'll start listening.
Why does that look so fucking low?
Maybe you'll start buying cassette tapes.
I wonder if those could ever make it like a return. Just like some guy, like some artist that decides to release a cassette tape in along with his whatever iTunes album. I think there'd be a novelty to that, like a Lil Wayne mixtape.
Oh, guaranteed. I'm sure.
Like the actual physical mixtape.
My mom is actually like one of the few people who still uses cassettes as her main, you know, form of audio. Because she does a lot of like choir practices and all that, and so all her life she's just like had like these portable recorders that she's learned how to use, and she doesn't have a smartphone, she doesn't know how to you know mini disc, she skipped out on that, like she has no idea how to operate anything digital, so she just knows how to hit play, pause, and record. So you know, often I have to try to find cassette tapes to buy for her. You know, just blank.
Yeah, blank
tapes.
Ones. Where do you get that? Like the drugstore?
Well, that's the problem right now. I think Shoppers still sells them, but like for the most part, it's you can't find them anymore. They're like antiques. You know, they're like Polaroid cartridges.
I used to have that for my car. Was I had the cassette player still, and got the converter so that you could plug in your iPhone or something and play
the cable. Yeah.
Yeah, the cable that you needed the little cassette deal to put in.
Yeah.
And play it through there.
Okay. What were your cassettes?
No, I'm saying I just that was my use for my cassette player in my car, was to put the cable.
Oh, gotcha.
It's attached to a cassette that you put in and then you plug into whatever device
you
want to play.
You never use the cassette deck, you just use
the plug. Use the cassette deck.
Right.
But I used to make in high school, I made like mix tapes for myself.
Oh, me too.
And then eventually I didn't get a like CD burner until well into it was first year of university where we pretty much needed to have them for projects, and I had to install a CD burner. But it was always cassette tapes up until that point. And I had a Walkman that I used throughout high school and just listened to that. And it was no skipping to the next song. You'd have to listen to every song right through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I never do now. When I have my iPod on, I'll listen. If there's a song I like, very rarely do I listen to the entire thing through. It's short attention span.
You don't even listen to the whole song?
No, I'll be listening. I have it on shuffle, and then as long as I've heard something, skip to the next song.
Really? So you're always like, so okay, I like the song. And then you get to the chorus, and you're like, okay, I've had enough.
Well, songs can be a little repetitive, even in four-minute doses.
It's called a groove. What's supposed to be repetitive.
Yeah, I just put it on shuffle, and then I just...
You're just an impatient person.
I need to get those gloves for an iPhone because they drive me nuts when it's cold now and you got to wear gloves and fucking mashing your iPhone.
Honestly, yes. One of the I don't know if there's a greater indication of first world problems than the iPhone glove epidemic. I can't type on my smartphone with these gloves. I can't take these gloves off.
I can't wait till I get home to reply to somebody.
Trust me, I've looked for them. I could use some iPhone gloves.
Well, I don't have any, but one day...
Shit.
I will get you some in exchange for your Walkman you gave me.
No, it's yours. Walkman's yours. Enjoy
it's
that.
A weird Walkman. There's no rewind button on it. It's just fast forward.
I suppose. It was actually my first Walkman, so... I guess they just wanted you to flip it over and rewind, like flip over there.
That's really crazy.
It's crazy, but you know what?
Like you'd have to listen all the way through in order to get to the beginning of the next side.
Well, no, you could flip the side and just hit fast forward, which is actually rewind.
Oh, I guess though. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
So, I mean, but there's something about that simplicity that I actually really like, you know? Yeah. Like the minimizing of all the buttons, it's kind of cool. Where these days you're like, fuck, like, I mean... I probably got like 67 buttons.
You could probably download a digital cassette player on your phone. There's probably something that says cassette player. That's an app now.
Yeah.
Where it just plays your music with an animation of a tape spinning.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, you know, mixtapes for sure is sort of a missing art. I suppose like kids these days like will still make.
Oh man, you just sounded old saying that.
I've been saying that a lot more lately. Kids these days.
They're the worst.
Kids these days. Yeah, kids these days, I mean, they actually do even more advanced things. Like, they'll make actual mixes with, like they'll do, like, Girl Talk type of stuff, you know?
Yeah. When's he going to release something?
I don't know.
It's been... I'm not sure. I think it was 2010 he released that last one. I know it takes a while, but Christ, man, we're coming up on 5 years.
Yeah. No, but, I mean, he's not the only guy out there. There are lots of other musicians who do a similar type of thing. I haven't really been following, but...
Everyone's just taking his idea. Like,
it's hardly his idea.
He does it very well. There's talent to what he does. An extremely incredible talent to what he does. That's not simply just, I'm going to put some songs together.
I agree, but he's not the only person to do it.
Is he the most well-known?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It depends. Like,
does anyone else have a documentary on them?
Yeah. Like, I mean, if you consider hip-hop... to be that type of thing where, okay, I'm taking this bass line from this and putting it over the drums from something else, then, I mean, hip-hop itself from the early days was kind of like that.
I always go back to...
Dr. Dre actually has, like, this mix from, like, the early 80s.
Hey, what was your reaction to Suge Knight this past week? Apparently ran over a man, all allegedly, and killed him.
My reaction?
Do you follow Suge Knight and his...
Not so much, but... No? Yeah. I think, it's like he wants to go to jail. It's like he wants to go back to jail, I mean.
Maybe it's a publicity stunt on his behalf.
Yeah. It's like he wants to be convicted of something, you know? I don't know. I don't know what that guy... I suppose he's still loaded from, like, the Death Row catalog, but what has he done?
Are you going to watch that NWA movie when it comes out soon?
Maybe.
Oh, I would think you'd be all over that.
Like the what is it? The biopics? They're always so silly, you know. Like,
maybe that could be fun.
The Notorious B.I.G. one was like
we saw that
kind
together.
Ridiculous, yeah.
With Ben Mulrooney.
He was in the bathroom. Yeah, we were in the bathroom.
He was on the phone very loudly making his plans for Friday night, and it's just like, I'm glad I'm not.
Yeah. Why do people hate him so much?
I think he just projects an image to people. And if you don't know a person, you carve out how this person is. You extrapolate their television personality. Believe me, I'm sure there are people that...
Because I feel the same way about him. Like, he's just like the so douchey. He's like the epitome of the word douche when you think of it.
Yeah. Well,
but he could be the coolest, down-to-earth guy.
Maybe. But if that's the image you project on TV and so many people subscribe to that, then maybe there's an issue with how you project yourself.
What's the image you think you give out?
Of me, probably positive or negative. Like people that don't like me, the image I would project is probably that I'm a know-it-all who thinks he has the answer to everything, that can overtalk people that disagree with him, and someone that feels that he must get his opinion out there as fact. That would probably be the negative
side. Wow, that's I think that – I don't know if it's true or not. I mean, I
– You would know better than most. Maybe I do. Maybe I'm not aware of it enough. Perhaps I'm like that.
No, but I'll say just even from your assessment, it sounds like you – I don't know. It sounds like you're thinking very removed from yourself. Like it's a very objective opinion.
I think that you should I think most people, if you're objective about yourself,
yeah.
I look at everything I do and I try to be very – I think sometimes I'm too critical of my own stuff.
So
I do that I think is just horrendous.
How about people that like you? How do they feel about you? This one's a tougher one for you.
No, I think I can be objective about that too. Objectively, I think I do a lot of research of things I do. I try to be as accurate as possible and have a knowledge base that some people are frightened by in terms of memory and things like that. So I think that's good. I think I have a pretty good perspective on things that work, things that don't work that we discuss routinely on these shows.
Calm down, okay?
I'm pretty much the second coming of Christ for our religious listeners out there. I mean, I was definitely born on the wrong date because I am pretty great. Now you're going to do the same thing. I want to start off with the negative. What would a waiting hater? Ugh, hate that term. A disliker.
Hater.
The dislikers. What would waiting's critics say about you?
My critics would probably say that I'm somebody who doesn't put as much effort as I should be, given the dream job that I have. You know, doing the various things that I do, and trust me, I'm very grateful for everything that I do. I don't even feel the need to defend that. That's just kind of whatever. Feel however you feel. I feel they probably feel like I think I'm too lackadaisical about a lot of things, about things that I do, things maybe that I feel. I don't know. Kind of hard to think.
I feel this need to just jump in and defend you.
No.
I feel like I'm your accomplice.
This is like a terrible show. This is like really.
If we start recording,
very uncomfortable.
Oh, welcome to Review Away.
Oh God,
the show's begun.
It's really.
Well,
it's,
wait. I want. Before we kick off to the full review, I want you to say some positive things about yourself. I think we're so...
That's even harder.
I know. Absolutely. Why is that?
Well, nobody wants to come across...
I think that's a Canadian thing in general.
No.
I think people are very... I actually... it's very difficult to say anything positive about yourself.
Yeah.
Because I feel that in and of itself is a negative trait.
Well, you just simply – somebody is simply asking, hey, tell me something great about yourself is just kind of inviting, criticism, really.
That's where you need to be objective and look at yourself as someone that has strengths.
Yeah.
I would argue your approach to these shows
– you don't have to compliment me.
Oh, I'm going to insult you at the end. Don't worry.
Okay.
I think that you are much calmer. I think sometimes I might project a life and death – reaction to a pro wrestling storyline, whereas I think you have the ability at times to acknowledge good and bad, but at the end of it, we hit that stop button, we put up the show, and life goes on.
Right, okay. So it's a yin.
I think people like that calming...
Yin and yang.
What?
Yin and yang.
And yang?
Yeah. The symbol, the yin-yang symbol.
Okay, well, where does yang come from?
Well, that's how you pronounce it.
Oh, you're supposed to... Yin and yang?
Yeah.
Why do people always say yin and yang? Is that incorrect?
Because they don't know how to fucking pronounce Chinese properly.
Oh, okay. So it was Jimmy Wang Yang all these years.
Well, he's Korean, so I don't even know how that's supposed to be.
Okay. We're getting into territory where I'm going to offend then if we continue down this path. So let's
just calm down. This is not life or death.
God. Whatever I was about to say would have been accurate.
Okay, this is a really uncomfortably introspective podcast so far. I don't like it.
For those that are listening, if you want more of this over the course of 2 hours, live, as announced on Monday night, we have secured our location for WrestleMania 31 and the second annual Review Away live podcast. I'm excited for this, Way. This was growing into quite the headache for you and I to simply secure a location. And last week, when we were able to nail down a location for Dallas, more than a year into the future, it really hit me of just, this is ridiculous. There are people out there that very much are dying to have Wei Ting and John Pollock grace their establishment. So we have found this place as I'm just simply
stalling so I can find the place. You say we, but what is the true story behind this? Who actually found this?
My wife found this place for us. Mm-hmm. We were still dealing with this one hotel chain that will go unnamed and trying to simply book a room where we could do this podcast. And for 4 weeks, I was constantly just given the cold shoulder. We'll get back to you, leaving messages. Finally, the guy calls as I am on the air on Friday and informs us, all our rooms are booked on that morning. If you have any more questions, here's my number. Like, well, nope, that's pretty open and shut. You don't have a place for us to do a show.
Yeah, what TV shows are you watching? That's my question. So, I just want to talk to you. That's all.
I did what I always do when I'm angry. I went to Wei's office to vent, and Wei just backs me up, and then I leave. It's the cheapest form of therapy known to man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't do anything.
Gives a big, oh, he's back. As I walk in,
I actually just like look at my computer and I don't even make eye contact.
No, that's fine though. Yeah. I just need someone to just complain. Mm-hmm. And went home that night and I just told my wife the situation. I'm like, how is it so goddamn hard to just find a place to do a live podcast? How can I find a restaurant in this area or something like that?
I don't know how.
Well, what is this?
How do you find places?
It's just annoying searching that I don't want to have to go through and then contacting the place. But within about 3 minutes, my wife found this place and said, this place has like a 4.5 out of 5 star review and it's a barbecue place. I was like, I'm sold. You could tell me it's a hot dog stand at this point and if it holds 50 people, we'll book it. So I contacted their manager, looked up their website, found it, contacted the guy. And I was like, oh, I hope he gets back to me. My wife's like, it'll probably be Monday they get back to you. I was like, I don't know. They work quick. This dude got back to me within 15 minutes.
Wow.
And we have secured our location. The Smoking Pig Barbecue Establishment in San Jose, California, 1144 North 4th Street, which is very close to where myself and Mr. Tingmon are going to be staying. So very close by, and we'll be holding our live podcast Sunday, March 29th, WrestleMania Day at 11:30 a.m. Pacific time. So take note of the time zone difference for those of you traveling to California. We do have a Facebook.
Yeah, don't show up at 11 a.m. Eastern.
No, things going to be done. We will be out of the.
No. Things wouldn't have begun yet. They'd be there at 8 a.m.
You're right. Eastern ahead. So you could get there.
You could just get there and hang out, have some barbecue. I don't know if they're open.
They open at 11. Yeah. So you hang out. It will be closed for those 3 hours.
Hang out in the parking lot.
But that is going to be happening Sunday, March 29th. We'll be wrapped up with lots of time for you to get over to Levi's Stadium if you are going to WrestleMania. But let's be honest, the main event is that morning. We should call this the kickoff show.
Is that what we
should have gone head to head with the network.
Okay.
No, that probably wouldn't have been a fantastic idea.
No. Kickoff show. I like that. I like the kickoff show.
Yeah. It's It's kind of like a lazy term, though. I mean, the kickoff you equate with football.
Okay, what do you call it?
The pre-tie-up, the pre-collar and elbow.
Yeah.
What would be the pre-punch, the
pre-punch.
Maybe. The pencil sharpener before you book the show.
That's very specific.
These are terrible.
Yeah.
We'll spend the first hour debating this on the podcast.
Okay. Done.
And it's going to be the same format as last year. Open questions for those that show up live. Have a great setup. And then that will be for those not in California for the live show, you will get to hear it later that week.
Maybe we have an eating contest.
Ooh. We can do the wing bowl and we'll invite Mick Foley.
Maybe we'll just eat. Like, maybe it'll be an
hour. Oh, dude, I'm eating at this place.
Maybe it'll just be an hour of us eating. You guys can hear us eat on our microphones.
The best part last year was just having unlimited coffee. But this time, I might be downing ribs as we do this.
Me too. This will be just disgusting. Like, rib sauce all over our faces as we try to talk about wrestling. I'm looking forward to this.
Should be a lot of fun. It was a good time last year, so...
So look for the Facebook invite.
Soon. Yeah, we will post it on the message board. We just want to get an idea of numbers and how many we are expecting. We are going to have our own private area in the restaurant, too. Don't have to deal with any weird looks from people or just what in the fuck is a Wyatt family.
Remember last year there was this family? Like this is this group of people just in the corner.
There's like 40 people that are there for the podcast and like 43 that are in this restaurant. And the three that were not having any clue what this was. So yeah. It was just priceless. They did not last long.
No.
I would say 20 minutes and they were out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it, folks. 1144 North 4th Street, San Jose is where the location is. You can plan accordingly. Lots of stuff going on WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, and that is, again, the Smoking Pig Barbecue, smokingpigbbq.net.
Yep, you can check that out. This week's review, bit of an odd one, the February 9th, 1998 edition of Monday Nitro, as selected by Wei Ting last week
from the request thread, yes.
This had an infamous match between Lord Steven Regal and Bill Goldberg, which has been... It's funny because usually when there is something like this, a controversy, years later, the stories come out, you make sense of it, the two sides make up, and it's, you know, all is well. In this particular case, it seemed like they kind of apologized for everything after the match, moved on, but in the years since... Two men with diametrically opposed views to what exactly happened before and in the layout of this match, what happened during the match, and whose fault it was afterwards. And we'll hear some clips later on because Steven Regal, and Bill Goldberg have addressed these the talks of this particular match over the years, and we will hear each side of the story as we get to that particular match. But this particular Nitro, a difficult one for people to find, which sometimes is...
That match, though, is readily available.
Yes, that will be kind of the main focus for the feedback, is looking at the actual match. But this was the three-hour era of Nitro. The prior month, they had expanded to 3 hours and also introduced Thunder, which we reviewed a couple of weeks back. The biggest takeaway on this show, Wei, was the highlights from Thunder involving a flame in order to break up scenes instead of the lightning
instead
bolt.
Instead of
the thunder rather than lightning.
Yeah.
So thank God, a positive production change for Thunder.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll have let's say wrestling got really big and they needed a third primetime show, we could have had Wednesday Water and it would have just been like a splash noises.
Oh, that would have been nice.
Yeah.
A very cooling effect.
Fire, thunder,
like
water.
A waterfall and transition.
We'd have like Sunday Earth, you know? Like just like mud. Like mud noises.
Do you remember our pal Rob McLaren's practicum project in our last year of Ryerson?
No.
You're given the whole year to do anything you want as your major final project, and this guy, Rob McLaren, who is legitimately one of the funniest individuals I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
He worked with another guy, our pal Kevin Bailey, and I don't know who else was part of their team. And then the final day, everyone watches everyone's project. Me and Wei were part of a group that did a 22-minute show designed for like an HBO thing. And they did a complete, like, a DVD on water. And it was just waterfalls.
Oh, man, yeah.
And it was done in such a way, and Rob did these voiceovers where it was like nature porn.
Yeah.
And it was, like, the funniest thing, and to their credit, maybe the most commercially viable.
Absolutely.
Because this was when those fireplace DVDs were all the rage. And I was like, of all these projects we watched, and all due respect to ours, this is the most likely thing that could get bought.
Absolutely, 100%.
And it was incredible.
I mean, yeah, this was like, you know, when you're in school, everybody wants to do, I want to make Breaking Bad, or like, you know, I want to do this great 3D animation type of thing, all this bullshit.
One group actually got, because you had to pitch all your ideas, got up there, and this was in 2006, mind you, and they pitched the idea of a sympathetic serial killer that kills people and is the protagonist. Essentially the exact plot of Dexter.
Oh, wow.
Which
okay.
was pitched.
Interesting. But, I mean, this guy, he just went out. And honestly, well, I mean, he talked about it afterwards. I remember him actually saying, you know, I just wanted to pick something I could shoot really easily and just...
And they did it.
They
was great.
The whole year on it, and they just had the rest of the time to do it.
And worked smart, not hard.
Yeah. But you know what? You're absolutely right. I could see people, like, legitimately. You know, you go to, like, a drugstore, and there's like, CDs.
Of course.
Of waterfall sounds. And it's a huge industry. Actually, kids, even. Kids, baby. Like, have you heard of a Baby Einstein? You know what
no.
that is? It's like a series of, like, tapes for babies, and they're often like just kind of like images like this. It's easy as hell. What are we doing, like, even reviewing wrestling? We should be catering our reviews to babies.
Maybe we should venture out a little more.
Yeah.
Review, you know, get into the mind of a toddler.
Mm-hmm.
And see what they make of a just, Baby Einstein.
Yeah. Okay.
Somehow we ventured off from the WCW Thunder sound effects to water and babies. Tony Schiavone and Mike Tenay were your commentary team for the first half of Nitro. Bobby Heenan would only do the last half, I guess. I guess he had a sweet deal there. He wasn't expanding to 3 hours. He was contracted for an hour and 45 minutes every week, and that's what he was going to do. Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff come out. Bischoff says he is asked by people how he has accomplished so much in such little time, and says it's by following Hollywood Hogan's rules. Hogan refers to this WCW thing being the hot thing and being talked about in, quote, all of the girly bars.
And now that this WCW thing, the word is on the street. It's in the gyms in Venice Beach. It's in all the girly bars. And now that the word is out, the WCW is stirring all this stuff up. I'm sick of the gaga.
Oh.
WCW, really big in the girly bars.
Mm-hmm.
So the homosexuals were choosing WCW in 1998. Is that what you took from this?
No. I think he meant strip clubs.
Girly bars?
Yeah.
I took this to mean gay bars.
No, I don't think so.
Maybe both. Maybe Woody's.
Yeah, probably.
In Toronto had Nitro on every Monday night.
Zippers.
Zippers. Zippers another.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't doubt that. They're probably talking about Nitro in every bar. Every bar in existence.
Yeah, all those college campus parties.
Yeah.
So from cassettes, we're actually going to talk about VHS tapes later.
Nice. Wow.
He says he's sick of people saying the NWO is breaking up. He's going to find Randy Savage tonight and give that coward the wrestling lesson he deserves. Savage appears in the crowd with a microphone and accepts this challenge. Says he's going to put his wrestling and fighting clothes on later and expose Hulk Hogan. This coming from a man wearing a t-shirt and spandex at this point, but there was still a next level of wrestling clothes he had to get into and would fight in these exact same clothes. Come back with the Nitro girls, and Schiavone says that we have the makings of the biggest Nitro in history.
Sure.
Tony Hyperbole Schiavone.
Yeah.
Getting ready for the biggest Nitro ever in El Paso, Texas. They come back with Schiavone and Tanay, but the graphic comes up listing Larry Zbyszko, who is not there in his seat, though the graphic says he is keyed. And they explain he has not shown up for work yet. There's a feud going on between Steve Mongo McMichael and the British Bulldog, and they showed highlights of their war. And then McMichael cutting a promo, which is always good times, stating, "I have to give it up to that pumped-up Englishman." And makes a challenge on Nitro, and then they had a double countout. This somehow led to Steve McMichael not facing the British Bulldog again, but instead Glacier, Ray Lloyd.
Yeah, who had recently just debuted. Didn't even debut yet on the Night Thunder that we looked at, right?
He had come in 97 at this point. He was out and about. He was glacialing.
He was
on ice.
Frosting,
yeah. His character. Luis Boccoli appears at the announce desk and says he is Larry Zbyszko's friend and he has all his bags. This at the time while Luis Boccoli was feuding with Larry Zbyszko. McMichael gets guillotined neck first on the top rope and then tossed to the floor. Glacier comes off the second turnbuckle into this weak back elbow, takes a bump off that. McMichael hits his three-point stance twice, and then the Mongo Spike, the Tombstone Piledriver, is delivered. Big pop for this finish, and McMichael gets to win in 4 minutes and 6 seconds. And McMichael really played to this Texas crowd, but then Mortis, with James Vandenberg, the future Sinister Minister, appear. Mortis attacks McMichael, hits a Russian leg sweep. Schiavone states, "This is shocking." But then Mongo drops Vandenberg, hits the Mongo Spike to Mortis, and cuts a promo about taking out the trash in El Paso, Texas. So a thwarted run-in by Mortis.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought Mongo just looked terrible, and certainly, you know, didn't look like somebody of the skill level who deserved this push. But then again, I don't know really what the stature of this guy was in football.
Well-known football player.
And, you know, he certainly seemed very over with this audience.
Yeah.
And was largely, for a celebrity, passable in ring.
Yeah, I guess sliding scale. Spicoli remains on commentary with Zbyszko's briefcase and is just concerned about Larry, hoping he's okay. Next match was Norman Smiley taking on Conan with Vincent in his corner. Conan was really starting to get over at this particular time as he's playing to the crowd, which it seemed like a lot of the NWO members were starting to do.
Yeah.
Not necessarily going to be the most effective heels in the world. It was simply, let's get over.
Mm-hmm.
This was a very kind of eerie recollection as Spicoli notes that tomorrow is his 27th birthday. He would turn 27 on the Tuesday and would die on the Sunday.
Wow.
Of an overdose and passing out in his sleep and choking on his vomit after just taking a ton of pills. So it was very eerie to hear this guy.
What was the date?
He died? He died the following Sunday, which would have been February 15th.
Holy shit. Wow. Yeah. So this was his last.
This was his I assume he was on Thunder that week.
Yeah.
So this would have been his last week. And
wow.
Yeah, very kind of eerie, the fact he was so featured on this particular show and starting to at least gain a character doing this. He was trying to get into the NWO at the time playing this lackey.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, dying at the age of barely 27 years old when he died. But just to put everything into context on this timeline. Smiley hits him with a number of drop kicks. Spicoli is downplaying Hogan and Savage as no different than he and Chris Adams in a WCW versus WCW match. Why should we care about these NWO guys having a match? Conan applied this version of the Koji Clutch while also applying a Kimura.
Hmm.
This is something you got to work on.
Yeah.
This could be the key to victory. And then hits a DDT to Smiley. Conan just rolls over Smiley with this forward roll and then hits a gut wrench for a two count, catches Smiley for a cradle DDT and applies the tequila sunrise for the win at 4 minutes and 40 seconds. One thing I really noticed at this time I mean, sometimes it's an argument on Raw that it's just guys filling a lot of time. The same was the case in Nitro, but it was a lot shorter matches, and you'd get a lot of matches like this that just – it was just a time filler for a lot of times for guys to do some moves. They were essentially squash matches at times
with sure.
the guy that's featured in Conan against Norman Smiley, who was didn't have his character that he would later have. He was just a guy on the roster.
But I'll say I largely prefer these short matches in WCW than your typical WWE matches with just two big guys. At least in WCW, you have a very talented undercard, a very technical and versatile styles. And
that's
you know,
true.
This was, I think, a prime example of that, where you have Conan, who just has some very spectacular looking offense, very much like a lot fancier with the submissions and than much of the roster. And then you have Norman Smiley, who I think is a very underrated technical wrestler, just great execution with everything he did, but you know, maybe never got that much of a serious push because he had a very light style, very soft.
Mike Tenay then interviews Brad Dillon of GM Motorsports. And the WCW Motorsports team is going to be sponsoring Lance Hooper in car racing. And
NASCAR.
What we learned here, lots of exciting things for WCW Motorsports and GM in the near future. They have a fast car, as we are showing, and it is the number 23 car.
Right.
Just grabbing those.
Man, just like.
Sports fans.
I'm so like far removed from. You know, that realm.
The NASCAR scene?
Yeah.
This wouldn't get your curiosity today if WWE sponsored a NASCAR?
NASCAR, no. I don't think so. Maybe food truck. I'd be somewhat curious, you know?
Did you see this NASCAR ad during the Super Bowl? It was pretty much just a PSA on how great NASCAR is and how it appeals to so many people and that only a few miles from one of their main racetracks is a wine tasting vineyard where you can take your wife on race weekend.
This was a Super Bowl ad?
Yep. And they were talking about how it aired during the Super Bowl and how.
Sounds like shit.
They basically said the world is getting too soft where eating gluten is considered dangerous and everyone uses social media. Be a man. They actually said just. Grab your wife and kids, kiss your wife, and something to that effect, and come watch NASCAR.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't play NASCAR in those girly bars.
No.
Then they plug the Nitro parties where you can send your VHS tapes to one CNN center, and they use the graphic of a VHS tape and a camcorder to use on this screen.
Mm-hmm.
Nitro parties. Could you imagine?
Well, maybe that's what we should be doing.
Raw parties.
Well, we should call it.
Do a live podcast every week. We'll move to San Jose and have it at a barbecue joint.
Exactly.
Or find a barbecue joint in Toronto.
We should actually have a Nitro party the night before WrestleMania. That should be the theme.
Well, it's called the Hall of Fame. We could have the after party, after the Hall of Fame.
No, we'll watch an episode of Nitro.
We'll watch Nitro.
Yeah.
Then Nick Patrick is in the ring. J.J. Dillon comes out. Says that Nick Patrick is not the official for the next match. He was under suspension at this point after the Starrcade debacle, where all of WCW should have been under suspension for the bungling of that main event. Dillon says he doesn't know why he's here. Patrick then gets on the microphone and maybe cuts the best promo of his career. Says there have been no formal charges or a trial. WCW doesn't want to stand by J.J. Dillon. Says, I've been with this company before Ted Turner bought it. And says, unlike you, I didn't put myself on the market for the highest bidder, referring to J.J. Dillon going to the WWF and then coming back. Threatens him with a lawsuit. And then Dillon says he is going to exercise his authority and brings out security. And Louis Spicoli, fast on the ball here, says, that is a lie. J.J. Dillon has never exercised in his life.
Duh.
And Patrick is taken to the back by security. For a referee doing a promo, this is the upper echelon of referee promos.
I agree with you. This was impressive. And I wonder when they selected him for this role if they're considering any of the other referees, you know, for this big on-air role.
Yeah. Who Nick Patrick could talk.
Who else could cut a promo on that WCW referee?
You know, if he had been given some mic time before the Invasion pay-per-view for that awful singles match with Earl Hebner, maybe that could have been the difference maker in the Invasion.
Perhaps.
Nick Patrick leading the force.
Is he still there?
Nick Patrick, he's still... is he still... No. He was let go a while back.
No, not
there anymore. Then we go to Eugene Nagata, who comes out with Sonny Ono. And way, 1 week after we trumpeted the historical selfie taken by Ric Flair and Vince McMahon in 2002, out walks Sonny Ono with a handheld camera and takes a selfie with Yuji Nagata 4 years before the 2002 Royal Rumble. Two selfies in a row.
And Japanese people Asians have been taking selfies
forever. They had to have
forever.
Invented the selfie.
Oh, yeah. Selfie sticks, all that shit.
This is a match that I am so glad has been documented. Yuji Nagata against Disco Inferno. Mm-hmm. A match that took place. A match that exists. A match that I had to text away as soon as I stumbled upon this while watching Nitro.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for people who are unaware, describe Yuji Nagata and what would you equate him to in the North American scene?
Oh, it's... I mean, this was when he was not even in his prime, where he would have his run later as really the focal point of New Japan Pro Wrestling throughout 2001, and then got thrown into that to that shoot fight at the end of 2001 and somewhat was hurt by that. But he was the cornerstone for New Japan at a time when they were very much mixing in worked and shoot matches and incorporating all the mixed martial artists, which did a number on New Japan. In terms of in ring, he was every bit as much, I would say, of a Chris Benoit level. It's incredible that this guy was loaned out to WCW for the time he was and was just a random guy, mm-hmm. much like Okada was in TNA, mm-hmm. who years later you would look back on. And here's Yuji Nagata, throwaway match on Nitro with Glenn Gilberti. Mm-hmm. But it goes to what you said about the depth of WCW's roster in 98. It was unreal, the mm-hmm. amount of talent that they had and the talent that would continue to grow after WCW. And Yuji Nagata, I think many people would look at as one of the best performers of the past 20 years. Disco Inferno, maybe not, but Nagata attacks him at the bell, attacks him with kicks to the leg and chest, goes for the Nagata lock, but Disco makes it to the rope. Spicoli tells Tony Schiavone not to yell, and Tony comes back, "Don't you get excited about our sport?" And later, Tony just flat out tells Louis, "I don't believe you when you say things." Just shutting down Spicoli. Schiavone, man, no fucks to give on this broadcast. I enjoyed the putting his foot down Tony Schiavone, unlike 2000 where the guy didn't give a fuck. Nagata blocks a double sledge and then suplexes Disco, hits a running capo kick, and then hits a belly-to-belly suplex. Ono gets on the apron and instructs Yuji Nagata to deliver more punishment to Disco, but then Nagata misses a fist off the second turnbuckle, and Disco Inferno hits the chart buster, the stunner, and pins Yuji Nagata at 2 minutes and 58 seconds.
Wow.
A result that life just shakes its head at.
I can't believe the match was that short.
258.
Wow.
Disco and Nagata. And then La Parca runs in and attacks Disco Inferno with a chair from behind, then attacks Nagata with a chair and dances on the chair as Spicoli gets up and leaves and believes he knows where Larry Zbysko is. So this match, a backdrop for La Parca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another run-in post-match. This is like two times in a row now. But just even with the short glimpse that we get, you can really see how awesome Yuji Nagata is. I mean,
Yuji Nagata is the performer that Daniel Bryan says is the best wrestler he has ever worked with.
Wow. What do you think was the incentive for New Japan to send this guy over?
Well, they had a working arrangement with New Japan where they'd send guys over for tours from WCW.
And who would they get in return?
They'd get Yuji Nagata.
No. Who would New Japan get?
Oh, they got Benoit would frequently go over there. Eddie Guerrero would go over there.
Okay.
Mainly their junior heavyweights that would go over there for tours.
Well, I guess it's good for New Japan. But, I mean, WCW, it's not like
they sent Alex Wright over for one of the Super Juniors.
Right, okay. But
I think they sent Buff Bagwell too, and they had the NWO Japan deal at the time as well, and they got O'Hara Airport in return.
What?
Bobby Heenan, remember? Michiyoshi O'Hara?
Yeah.
An airport named after him.
Mm-hmm.
You missed Bobby Heenan on this particular match, didn't you?
In this match, yeah. I would have loved to have had more Japanese puns.
Who? You? You is G? G Nagata? Jeez. Terrible. I'm sorry. They show a video for Savage and Luger coming up at Super Brawl 8. And the problems going on with the NWO. Some of these videos that aired on this show, Jesus Christ, like they co-opted like a high school to put these together. Dude, these were terrible.
Yeah, certainly not the level that, you know.
Even by 98 standards, these were god awful.
WWF didn't exactly have great videos, though, either until like, I'd say like 2000, you know.
Mike Tenay brings out Lex Luger. Tenay says he has words for. That Lex Luger has some words for all of these fans and gives the mic, just setting up Luger for the interview. And then Luger says, no, I don't have words for the fans. I have words for Hogan and Savage. Okay. He is sick of these two. He's sick of the NWO. He tells Hogan that he has the biggest match of his life coming up with Sting at Super Brawl. He should be getting ready for that match instead of worrying about Savage tonight. He says he's going to put his gear on, and he hopes that Hogan and Savage beat each other to a bloody pulp tonight. A fired-up Lex Luger.
Yeah, just honestly another shouting Lex Luger promo where I can't really say I even know what he's talking about.
I don't know.
He's just shouting.
But that body, my goodness, Lex Luger.
Well, we have to nominate some Scott Putski Award.
Oh, there are nominees on this particular show. I mean, mm-hmm. Who are we up to right now? I mean, Luger, it's tough. I feel like
he's a constant.
We need to enact the Wayne Gretzky rule with Lex Luger, where I think he's just disqualified. British Bulldog didn't technically. I guess he kind of was on this show in highlight form, but
I wouldn't count that.
Let's keep it open. Lex Luger is kind of an anomaly. Okay. I feel we should overlook him. Chris Jericho and Eddie Guerrero were next against Dean Malenko and Chavo Guerrero. This was one of the 3 weeks where Chris Jericho and Eddie Guerrero were just randomly put together as this heel tag team that both men thought had so much potential. And I watched this match way, and I remember these two teaming at the time. And to me, it was more good cruiserweight matches. And today I watch this team could have been something else.
They could have been one of the best ever.
Are you saying that sarcastically? Because I watched this. I was like, the amount of like being this franchise heel tag team, especially in a division that WCW largely didn't pay any attention to. I think these guys could have really just worked in that tag division if they got the tag titles away from the outsiders. And these guys could have just done so much and put cruiserweight teams together, regular teams, but these two worked off each other so great.
Yeah, there are a large number of tag team moves that they had seemed to come up with.
Yeah, instantly, just double team spots.
Yeah. And just I'm even just thinking about personality wise, how these two would have worked out in character. And you had Eddie, who pretty much played a very aggressive, just angry person. You had Jericho, who was sort of the more flamboyant, quiet or louder. Flashy one, and I think that would have made some interesting, you know, just even personality dynamic.
It's not a direct comparison, but I really think that this is a team that Tyson Kidd and Cesaro could somewhat emulate, where Eddie Guerrero, he could do cruiserweight spots, but he could also work like kind of a physical style that Cesaro is kind of that hybrid of too. I mean, Cesaro can do, he's not just like a big man that doesn't go off his feet, whereas Jericho was very much the technician that Tyson Kidd equates to. And again, a team that I think does have promise here. And taking on Dean Malenko and Chavo Guerrero, a lot of involvement of Dean Malenko throughout this match. Eddie Guerrero was treated like a gigantic babyface here in El Paso, Texas, which the announcers finally brought up like midway through the match why Eddie was getting these, I would say, like among the biggest reactions of the show, if not the biggest.
Yep.
And this was while he was 100% heel at this point. Chavo blocked a quebradora and hit his own to Eddie. Jericho is wearing his cruiserweight title as he is tagged into the match and is informed he must take this title off during the match. Big chance of Jericho sucks. Lots of heat for this. Chavo comes off the ropes into a bulldog onto Jericho. Dean gets tagged in, kicks Eddie off the apron. Then Jericho comes off the ropes, gets caught by Malenko for a Texas Cloverleaf, and then Eddie breaks the Texas Cloverleaf with a missile dropkick. And then Eddie, again, tagged in right away. Huge chance. They double-team Dean. Lots of great double-team spots here. Quick tags in and out. Malenko pressed Eddie into the air and then dropped him throat first on the top rope. Jericho would come in with a double underhook into a backbreaker onto Malenko. Then Jericho missed a lion salt. Chavo tags in, gets all fired up. But then Malenko and Eddie fight on the apron. Eddie shoves Chavo off the top into the lion tamer by Jericho. They went 9 minutes, and Jericho and Eddie got the win. Just a great match for a nine-minute television match. And again, I just think Jericho and Eddie, it was instant chemistry with these two being put together as a just a random makeshift tag team that I bet there was no thought put into teaming these guys together.
For sure. And I think, you know, to have the pairing of these four people all together, a real treat to get on this late 90s edition of the show. I think Eddie, especially at this time, I just love watching his work. It just, you know, so fast, so flawless, and so aggressive. Really good match.
They showed a video on the Steiners. They have been having lots of problems over the past month, but tonight they will have a tag title shot against the Outsiders. We continued with more Cruiserweight action. Juventud Guerrera against El Dandy.
Okay.
The most underappreciated Cruiserweight of the era. Dandy pressed Hoovy into the air, into a Hurricane Rana. Then they're on the outside of the apron, and Dandy gets back body dropped over the post to the floor, allowing Hoovy to hit a cross body off the top to the floor. Dandy then gets sent into the post. Hoovy blocked a Mahistral cradle back in the ring. Dandy comes off the top, misses a somersault dive, and then Hoovy driver and a 450 splash for the win in 3 minutes and 40 seconds. I always was amazed at how close Hoovy would pull the guy in for the 450. Like, there was no margin for error, so little space for the knees to drop.
Mm-hmm.
Always surprised he didn't break a guy's face doing that 450.
You know, Juventud gets a big reaction on this crowd, you know, very close to the border. And they reacted huge for his finisher. They recognized what was coming and then, you know, reacted big when he hit it.
Very over in El Paso. Jericho runs in and attacks Hoovy, but Jericho gets drop-kicked to the floor. He says he was trying to come and congratulate him. Hoovy speaks Spanish, which got a great reaction from the crowd. He says he wants a Cruiserweight title shot, but Jericho asks what Hoovy has that he wants. And this sets up a title versus mask match for Super Brawl in San Francisco. And crowd reacted well to Hoovy, and this would be the match to set up Hoovy being unmasked at Super Brawl when they were on that big kick to just take guys' masks off. They couldn't get rid of Ray's mask the prior fall, so Hoovy would get unmasked instead.
I'd say he's a guy though who might have actually benefited though from the not having a mask. It was a little awkward having Jericho basically have to translate his opponent's words.
I thought he was just going to make up shit that Hoovy was saying.
No, he actually translated.
Yeah,
I mean, but I thought it made it work. I think I obviously prefer this than to have Juventud try to awkwardly speak English. You know, the message was conveyed fine. He won a hair versus title match.
The next generic video was on Bill Goldberg, and then Bobby Heenan joins the commentary duo as we get the three-man booth for the rest of the show. And the big one, Lord Steven Regal against Bill Goldberg. And it's funny to watch this match in hindsight and listen to the commentary team react to this particular match. Tanay notes this will be one of the stiffest tests yet for Goldberg. Regal starts off with these kicks to the back, and then
I feel like we should line out, you know, like,
okay,
what the match was supposed to be.
According to Regal's story, was that he was instructed by the road agent that this was to be a competitive 6-minute match.
Meanwhile, Goldberg at this point was only used to 90-second squashes.
Yeah, he'd come out, kill guys, spear, jackhammer. That was about it. So this was going to be
the first test, like the first real wrestling test.
Yeah, and then afterwards, there was anger towards Regal for making Goldberg look like that. But his argument was, that's what I was told to go out and do, was to do a 6-minute match and make it look competitive, which he definitely did. And right. I don't think it was a flawed idea. I mean, you're really balancing things because Goldberg was not great at this time. He was protected by going short.
And he freely admits it.
He
freely admits to basically letting Regal, you know, dictate the match, dictate the pace of the match.
These are the kinds of things, like, if I was experimenting with this guy to eventually need to do longer matches, I would be having him doing 10-minute matches on the road, doing house shows. That said, I thought that, you know, this was a bad match.
But that wasn't the only controversy. The only controversy was that Goldberg was claiming that Regal was, you know,
beating the shit out of him.
Exactly.
In this match.
Basically, you know, Goldberg is this kind of brand new guy, letting Regal kind of, you know, dictate the pace of the match. Meanwhile, he claimed that Regal took some liberties with a lot of his offense.
And Regal defends himself, saying, "I'm glad people think my stuff looks that good, but I never would go into the ring and try to hurt anybody," mm-hmm. and was simply doing what he was told. He was not trying to go out there and just flex his muscle against Bill Goldberg and show him up on national television. So we'll go through this match, and then we'll hear reactions from both men to this match. And so Regal is just hitting him with these kicks to the back, and then throughout the match using European uppercuts. And Heenan notes that Regal doesn't know what to do with him. Tenay then replies, "Regal looks perplexed," which was probably legitimate at this point, trying to get Bill Goldberg to go along with everything. Probably a lot of confusion on both ends.
It was immediately noticeable from the get-go that this is a real clash of styles where, you know, you have Regal, who has a very technical grappling style, and you have Bill Goldberg, who I guess is just kind of used to his explosion, you know, used to being very physical. And you have this guy kind of like working a very finesse style all around this big man who wasn't really able to reciprocate.
Regal just got him up for this hip toss, and then Goldberg immediately went to a head scissors. Regal got up and blasted him with this palm strike to the face.
Not only that, it followed up with a kick straight up to the jaw.
Kicked him like a fucking pro cop here.
Yeah. So like an upkick from when somebody is in guard, you know what I mean?
Yes. There was a back suplex by Goldberg, and then Regal clips the knee in front and goes back to these European uppercuts and delivering these knees to the face of Goldberg. Then Goldberg cuts him off with a jumping shoulder block. There's more open hand palm strikes and a headbutt delivered to Bill Goldberg. And then Regal comes out of the corner, eats a spear and the jackhammer. It didn't go 6 minutes. They went five. And Schiavone states, "Another test he passes with flying colors," which would be a debatable statement in the years to come. But this was different from any Goldberg match people had seen up until this point. I think they sensed there was some kind of a struggle in this match. And obviously both guys on different pages throughout this match. And this was Bill Goldberg in the deep end when he was not ready for it.
Well, I'll say I expected the match to be a lot worse. You know, I almost feel like if I didn't know that this was a controversial thing, that I wouldn't have noticed anything. It just looked like
It looked like a snug match with a struggle with a guy that really wasn't comfortable working that style, but yep, that almost can lend itself to this kind of a match too.
Exactly. And it's not like it broke down at any point. It's not like, you know, there are any big noticeable fuck-ups.
No one tried to pin someone with their stomach on the mat, which is something we have seen in WWE over the last year.
That is true. That is true. And, you know, I thought it actually forced Goldberg to showcase some of his, you know, more varied offense. And I thought he actually had some kind of cool-looking things in there. You know, he seemed to definitely didn't seem seasoned enough to be able to handle a match like this. But at the same time, he didn't look completely ridiculous either. I thought, in fact, like, I mean, you know, again, you really realize what is actually good. People always talk about how bad of a wrestler he is, but I think what really does make him stand out is his explosiveness, you know, even though it was probably what made him such a dangerous person to work with. But what he was able to do, he's able to pull off and make look very convincing.
All right, so both Regal and Goldberg have addressed this match. Regal, over the past year, was on Steve Austin's podcast. Bill Goldberg was on Jim Ross's podcast, which are both available at Podcast One. So here are both of their reactions to this match, and could not be in more disagreement.
I just come back off a 7-week suspension, right, from when I did the thing on the airplane, when I got thrown in jail in Alaska and all that, right? So I was on my best behavior.
Right.
Okay.
Who's running things at this time?
Eric.
Yeah.
Okay. I get there, and I am told by the agent, and Billy's there with the agent in charge, to go out and have a six-minute match. Bill had never done anything more than a 90-second match. And the words were, and we both heard it, have a competitive match. Something different, right?
I thought it was a competitive match.
Right. So we go out and go through a few things. Let's get this right. We get out there, and if you watch it, and if you know what you're watching for, and that's what throws me off. I'm glad that people still think that I'm that good that I can make it look like I'm killing people, right, or taking liberties. Go out there, and Bill doesn't really, he freezes up, he doesn't know it. So I'm just working around him, and that's all.
You're doing your thing.
If I'm telling you, I'm trying to get him to do stuff, and I'm working around him. I'm trying to get him to do, people say, I don't hit him any harder than I hit anybody else. In safe places.
You were snug, you laid your stuff in, you protected the business. In safe places. Yeah, I'm down with it.
There's no liberty to, it's just complete divvy talk when people go and say any different. And so I'm trying to get him to, you know, come on, do something. Eventually. And that's all it is. It's me sort of getting him through stuff.
Right.
Till he finally gets it to, and we do whatever we got to do. I come out and Eric comes up and starts screaming at me. And this is my exact words to him. Look. And Billy stood there. And Bill said to me, it's all my fault. He said, I'm sorry. And he seems to forgot about that. From what I don't know if he read his book. I don't know. I never read it. Somebody, people always come to you and want to tell you about it. That's the only way I hear about things. Oh, such and such said something about you. Such and such said. Sometimes I couldn't care less. If you don't like me work, I don't care. It's like me liking different types of music.
Subjective.
Right? I don't care. But if you start personal things, sometimes it gets to you a bit.
Sure.
So he said, I made him look how bad does that sound when he said, I made him look foolish? This is a big monster, right? And he's trying to make yourself sound any more silly, right?
That doesn't sound good because no one should ever.
Right.
You can't let that happen as a pro.
So, anyway, we come out, and my exact words were to Eric. I said, look, I can't hit myself. That was what I said. I said, I can't hit myself. I said, I'm trying my best to get him to do stuff to me, and he's not doing anything. And he stood there agreeing. Bill stood there agreeing. I look over at the agent who give us these. He was going, who told you to go that long, and who told you? I look over at the agent who I'm waiting for him to say, I did.
Yeah.
And he just buries his head in the paper, in his papers. And I'm that kind of fella. That's just me. I probably saved me a lot of times if I wasn't that way. But that's the way I am. All I've got is my word to me. And that's the way I am.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, if you're not going to say it yourself, I'm not going to say it. I'll take it on the chin like I take a lot of things on the chin. And I just waited for him to say something. He didn't. And people think I got fired that day. I didn't. I got fired several months later. And I got fired because I was a mess. I was out of my mind on drugs, you know what I mean?
Right.
But that was that was months later when I left WCW.
Yeah.
That may have had something to do with it. I might have soured the thing, but I didn't get fired that day.
Right.
Nowhere close to it.
Right.
It was like four or five months later, I think, that I left.
Stone Cold's got a podcast here on Podcast One, and he said that there's nothing to the story that he didn't try to take liberties with you. What is this? I'm confused.
He did. He did. Between he and Dave Taylor and, you know, a couple other the hard asses there, and I respect him for it. That's all good. And, you know, just don't try to take advantage of me on national TV when I'm a piece of clay in your hands and I'll do anything you want. Let me know it's going to be a Japanese match so I can give you some back.
Right.
Not so I can be led around by a guy who's going to kick me in the frickin' head when I'm sitting on all fours.
I got you.
I mean, I would have loved to have ever had the opportunity to do that one again, but that's a prime example, JR, as to, you know, I'm not the eternal baby face in this picture, but I'm telling you, man, I would let these guys do anything they want to me because I trusted them.
So that is Regal and Goldberg's reactions to the match, and yeah, as Regal kind of outlines, it was afterwards that they were upset at Regal, but Goldberg apologized, and he, since that time, has changed his story. Where the truth is, probably somewhere in the middle, when you have stories like that where each is contradicting the other.
Mm.
But hey, that's why we enjoy going back and watching these, because all of it exists on tape for us to go back and nitpick and watch.
Yeah.
You talk about having a party the night before WrestleMania. How about had we been doing this in 1998 and going on the Bruise Cruise on Memorial Day weekend?
Boy, sign me up.
Could you imagine some of the WCW talent on an all-expenses-paid cruise at this time, given the drug use at this point in time? Yeah. Holy Christ.
Who would they have gotten for these?
I have no idea.
It can't be anybody on the main card, right?
Oh, I'm sure they had. I don't know. I don't know what talent they threw at the. If anyone ever attended the Bruise Cruise, I would love to hear from you and know what went on the Bruise Cruise. Then we had our Nitro Party winner, Kim Perkins from the University of Kentucky, and showed the video of her and her friends doing a dance routine.
Yeah.
They were twerking before it was a term.
Mm-hmm.
Shivani says...
The footage just looks so dated.
I know.
Like, it looks so bad. People
camcorder.
Have terrible hair.
God, the process of, like, editing this and sending it in by mail or courier to Atlanta.
No, you probably didn't even have a video or a computers to edit with.
No. It was probably... They were probably cutting... Physically cutting the tape.
Two VCRs together.
Shivani reflects on the video and says, I wish we had something great like Nitro when we were in college. And Heenan says, we did. It was called dating. His best line maybe of the year. Spicoli returns with Zbyszko's briefcase. The never-ending drama of where the fuck is Larry Zbyszko continued. Louis Spicoli took on Gentleman Chris Adams. Another eerie match of two men that have passed on. There was a dropkick to Adams, who missed a splash in the corner and took a suplex. Raven's Flock then appears in the crowd. Adams hits a belly-to-belly, followed by his super kick, and then delivers strikes on the back of Spicoli. And Spicoli grabs the briefcase and smashes Adams in the head with it for the DQ at a minute 55, continues attacking him with it. When finally Larry Zbyszko shows up, chases Spicoli away, and Tanay just observes another NWO swerve. Obviously, Zbyszko decides to yell into the camera with all of the backstory and exposition of what happened and outlines in anger.
Say something. You're going out of your way to get yourself in an organization that's falling apart at the seam. And the only reason the New World Order wants to recruit you is because they can't get anybody else to join.
Louis Spicoli, you ran into my room and you switched my limo driver. I can't speak Spanish. Scott Hall put him up to it and refers to him as Spalloni during this outrage in anger. And even Zbyszko is just like, oh, are we still going here? I have nothing.
Yeah, this is a little awkward, especially since he didn't grab the microphone. He just
yelled. So none of the crowd knew what the fuck was happening. But I guess it was designed for the viewer at home who was just missing their Larry fix for the first portion of Nitro. The best video of all.
So how did they address this next week?
Do you not remember how they addressed this?
No, actually, I don't.
Okay. They started off Nitro the following week with the 10-bell salute for Spicoli and then didn't refer to him, but then had Larry Zbyszko on camera not break character and basically took a shot at Louis Spicoli being I can't remember exactly what he used, but he wasn't going to break character that these two were feuding even though one half of the feud had legitimately died. Mm-hmm. And it was a tasteless moment in Nitro history. And then that was it.
But wrestling is so interesting.
It's fucked. It's fucked way. The worst video of all was the Booker T one with like these graphics that were out of like YTV in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
Including the soundbite. This was Booker T breaking out of Harlem Heat, winning the TV title. We gonna quake this sucker up.
We gonna go quake this sucker up, 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 up. We gonna turn it up to 100,000 Harlem Heat degrees, and we gonna burn this sucker up. Can you dig it? Dig it. Sucker!
Quake this sucker up. That one never made it.
Yeah, not a t-shirt. Ultimo Dragon and Perry Saturn were next for a lengthy match, given these two and their stature in the company. Lodi came out with his signs, We're lost in El Taco. Pelican is on welfare. Tanae asks, what do those signs mean? And Shivani just concludes, it means, Mike, he's an idiot. Tony was a lot of fun back then.
Yeah.
I didn't quite appreciate Shivani to this degree, but he was not – I mean, when Nitro was hot, Shivani was very well regarded as a great announcer. And surprise, surprise, when the product sucked and his energy was zapped, he was not a great announcer.
Mm.
Saturn, he is referred to as wrestling's living gargoyle by Shivani. Dragon hits a leg sweep and then does his headstand on the top turnbuckle, coming down and knocking Saturn down. Shivani, in a rare case, correcting Mike Tanay on how to break down the STF, needing to get that bone right under the chin.
Mm-hmm.
Professor Tony. And then there was a spinning head scissors delivered to Saturn. Saturn lifted Dragon for an overhead belly-to-belly and then applies an armbar with Dragon getting the rope break. They're spending this whole time, by the way, building up Hogan and Savage for tonight. This huge, epic match. Lodi then put up a sign, why are we here? Which was kind of fitting. There's a Fujiwara armbar by Saturn. He's working over the left arm, then trying for a Kimura. The crowd gets distracted, and Bobby Heenan says, uh-oh, something's up. And Tony says, no, no, they're just focused on Lodi's sign, as there was clearly something going on in the crowd that they were not going to observe. Saturn is seated on the top as Dragon hits his running dropkick, and then a Hurricane Rana off the top goes for the Dragon Sleeper, but Saturn kicks him. Dragon runs and kicks him, reapplies the Dragon Sleeper, gets a rope break, and then Saturn attempts the Dragon Suplex, but cannot get it, and Saturn counters a Dragon Sleeper into a cradle for the win at 7:07.
I thought Saturn was good, but I thought Ultimo was great, man. And just to see him in this amazing shape like he is in here, he's got such an incredible flow, you know. At one point he's bouncing off the ropes, then he's hitting all his stiff kicks. I think he's just somebody who is able to mix everything together really seamlessly. So, again, with a lot of these undercard matches, even though they were largely short and kind of meaningless, they're just kind of a real pleasure to watch, to see all this variety of you know, international star talent.
You know, it's funny, but you look back at WCW, and yes, there's a lot you can complain about. But if you were like a big like imagine it today where you had a 3-hour show where, yes, you had your Ortons, your Cenas, your Big Shows and Canes. They were your main event guys. That was just the reality of things. Maybe you had a guy that was starting to pick up steam like a Daniel Bryan or a Roman Reigns. But then your undercard was filled with guys that otherwise would be in Lucha Underground right now, that would be wrestling in New Japan. You would have New Japan guys on the undercard of Raw. You mm-hmm. would have guys, you'd have a working deal with a lot of luchadors coming up from AAA to consistently fill out your undercards. I mean, imagine how dynamic Raw would be with that kind of just open doors of working with all these other offices and bringing in talent that you might be jaded to the main event mix, but God, you got so much stuff on the undercard.
Mm. They're making a small effort to kind of do that now with, you know, with guys like Kenta and, you know.
You're getting that in NXT, certainly, to a degree.
But it's very slow, and it just seems like they're a culture that wants to be in control of everybody from the beginning.
Ultimo Dragon. God damn it. Get this guy some fire. I want him to be a fucking dragon. A real dragon, which I think was pretty much their idea for Ricky Steamboat his second time around. Uh-huh. He's going to be the dragon.
Dragon, yeah.
Shivani starts the third hour with the subtle announcement that this might be the biggest hour in Nitro history. So put on your seatbelts. They recap Thunder with DDP putting over Benoit. And then, I don't know if you've paid attention to this recap, but they basically had a match in fog. From, I guess, pyro going off. Yeah, like, you could not see anything.
It looked like a match in a sauna.
And then they cut to the end of the match, and this had not cleared up at all. This crowd must have been furious.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a run-in by the Flock for a DQ, and Diamond Cutters delivered to clear the ring of the Flock. Booker T and Raven was supposed to be next for the television title. They go through the break before the match starts, and Raven gets on the mic, says Benoit isn't here tonight. Says Booker has property that belongs to Saturn. He should hand the title over. And Mickey J goes to call for the bell before it even begins to signal the end of this aforementioned match. As Booker T is attacked by Flock members, Raven attacks, gets a lot of heat, ends it with the even flow DDT. Saturn applies the rings of Saturn. The crowd chants Raven sucks. And Tony Schiavone makes a plea for WCW to no longer sell tickets to the flock to attend these shows.
Okay, good luck with that.
Also establishing the precedent, folks, that you, the ticket-buying audience, hey, you want to get in there with the TV champion, nothing is stopping you.
I'm also thinking about how much money the flock has spent on tickets to Nitro.
And travel.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, no wonder they dress like shit.
Could you just imagine, like, Raven waiting in line, you know, at the ticket booth?
Waiting for the on-sale code.
Yeah.
Get the pre-sale code.
That's how they afford
it. Guys, I got front row. Are we going 6 or 8? Secondary market is buzzing.
Yeah.
They come back from break, locked on a fan wearing an Austin 316 shirt. Great directing. And then we went to another video emphasizing the problems between Randy Savage and the NWO, and this was hit home by the sound effect of a clock ticking to get inside Randy's head. Hogan and Bischoff come out. Savage jumps Hogan, knocks down Bischoff in the aisle, and this whole time, Way, I'm listening to them plug Hogan Savage and confronting one another, and it's just like, okay, we're going to get a brawl. It's going to end. No. The bell rung and there was a match. Hulk Hogan versus Randy Savage for free on television.
Mm-hmm.
The Mega Powers exploding on Nitro 9 years later.
Mm-hmm. Well, didn't they have many matches before in WCW?
They had pay-per-view matches. I don't think they had done a singles match on Nitro. So clearly television, a primal focus for WCW at this time. And to their credit, this did a big number. This show did like a 4-6. So big numbers. And destroying Raw, which did like a 3-2 on this particular night. Savage is choking Hogan with a bandana and had the advantage. Hogan cuts off Savage, beats him down, clotheslines, elbow drop. Savage just low blows Hogan right in front of Randy Anderson. It's just whatever. Hogan hits a back suplex. He's choking Savage on the mat, tosses him to the floor. Savage runs Hogan into the barricade, climbs to the top, and goes for a double axe handle, which Hogan sidesteps, and Savage jumps into the metal barricade. Then Hogan grabs a chair, but Elizabeth pulls the chair away, allowing Savage to send Hogan into the post and attack Hogan with the same chair. They go back into the ring. Savage climbs to the top for the elbow drop, but Buff Bagwell pulls the referee out. Vincent, Hall, Nash, and Conan all attack Savage and stomp him. The match is thrown out. They hold him up as Hogan delivers a chair shot to the head and then one to the back. And Savage finally jumps Hogan again in the ramp, but the NWO separates them to go to break. You got your match. The match sucked, but I don't think that's what was drawing eyeballs at this particular time. I mean, just, God, the in-ring was just wretched, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, you know, despite that, this audience,
they reacted to stars.
Absolutely.
And that was where they were. They were Bellator in 2015. Hey, Stephen Bonner and Tito Ortiz was a god-awful fight, and it did a huge number.
Gotcha.
And Kimbo Slice is going to be the exact same.
Sure. Yeah. I thought while watching Hogan's chair shots, he always had, like, the lightest chair shots to the head.
Oh, he was studying up on CTE.
Well, exactly. It's like here's a guy who, you know, even years prior to all this actual research, recognized the dangers of head trauma. It was clear.
He was aware. He understood, hey, when I ride a bicycle, I put a helmet on for a reason. Didn't just wake up one day and people said, hey, head trauma's bad. Lex Luger comes out and they cut to a sign. Flex for me, sexy Lexi. Someone made this. He says he called out Savage, but instead Elizabeth comes out to ringside, and Lex Luger is going on and on about how Savage is not a man, and then gets jumped from behind by Savage, and he goes for the elbow drop, but Sting runs out to stop Savage, attack Savage, crowd explodes for Sting. He was, even after Starrcade, still very much over here in this hangover period after Starrcade and that buildup, and going into the Hogan rematch at Super Brawl. So Luger and Sting are in the ring. The NWO returns. They're attacking Savage, and he hits the Scorpion Death Drop. And the NWO, they circle around the ring and then drop a net from the ceiling, trapping Luger and Sting, who looked so stupid. The cameras zoom out as these men are under a net being attacked as Shivani announces they just have to take a commercial break.
Dude,
let's make our baby faces look as fucking dumb as possible. Net? Yeah.
No, it really looked like a Roadrunner cartoon.
Oh, God.
Like
all they needed one of those guns to shoot and trap them in a net. You ever seen those that they use for animals?
The net guns?
Yes.
No, I haven't seen that.
I think in my weird warped brain, I think they did that once.
Mm.
They shot a net gun.
Okay.
God, was this just your two baby faces who looked like fucking fish that were being caught and brought in by the hunters. 3 hours, folks. The memory and the idea bank does run a little dry. Shivani says he doesn't feel he is speaking out of school as they come back, but the NWO is having problems. Yes, Tony, very big of you to reveal this issue. And then they talk about the Steiner brothers and their problems. Scott has been the glory hog of late, and this has upset Rick. The Outsiders come out for just a mesmerizing segment. They say their problems from earlier tonight are in the bag, referring to the net. Scott Hall does his baby face survey, as these were the heels at the time, where it encouraged the crowd to boo WCW and cheer the NWO. Shivani says, "We've already seen a titanic fight tonight." Appropriate description of WCW in 98. And the NWO music is playing. At the end of their promo, they just stay in the ring. And then the music cuts and they go back to talking.
Yeah.
It was like a two-act promo separated by music.
Oh, man. It almost just felt like they were basically taking the TV time to say whatever they wanted. Nothing they really said had that much of an impact on the match coming up. It was just them taking the TV time to, you know, get over with the crowd and give shout-outs to their friends.
The worst heels. Then Nash gives a shout-out to Six-Pac to hurry up and get better. He was out with a neck injury here, and this, I think, was days before he would get his notice that he was being fired by WCW as a fuck you to Holland Nash. And then we went to a commercial. They played a Super Brawl ad, which ended with David Penzer's mic being very audible, counting the fans down to cheer when they returned from break.
No.
And we got our main event, the Outsiders against the Steiner Brothers for the tag titles.
What were the fake belts? What were these?
I don't know what these titles were. If there were two versions of the WCW tag titles,
They mentioned how the phony belts. But I'm sure it was just part of a storyline.
I think maybe they used interim titles, perhaps, that they took at the end. I don't know.
Okay.
They announced Sting has suffered an injury due to the net. And we'll have an update for you on Thunder.
He still can't get out.
Yeah, he might have got whiplash or who knows. Rick starts the match with Hall. The Outsiders get the heat on Scott when he's tagged in. Shivani reflects on what a tremendous show this has been from top to bottom. In a spot that just tells you everything that was wrong with this top-end picture, Kevin Nash, the hated heel, teases his finisher, which results in the crowd getting up to their feet, cheering in anticipation that we might see the band powerbomb. But no, that asshole Scott denied us of the big move. And he then tags in Scott Hall to get the heat, so the crowd would boo that they wouldn't get their powerbomb on the babyface. Scott finally hits a double underhook suplex to Hall. Scott is then knocked into Rick, who is inadvertently tagged in. Scott is not aware of this as Rick scales to the top rope and hits a bulldog from behind to Hall and pins him at 7:13, grabs the tag title, celebrates, passes one to Scott. He is reluctant, but then they hug and they celebrate with Ted DiBiase to end the show, and would be a short title reign, as Scott would then turn on Rick at Super Brawl.
Mm.
And the era of White Thunder and later Big Papa Pump would commence.
There you go. I mean, I wouldn't say a very good match. The finish just kind of came without much build. And really, the win didn't feel all that important for a tag match or a tag title match. And you could, I guess, understand why.
But, what'd you feel about this Nitro? It was a long one.
I mean, the Regal Goldberg match is definitely worth watching, just because it's one of those. It seems like it's one of those moments that's still talked about in pro wrestling history. That, you know, that has a very interesting backstory behind the scenes. The undercard wasn't all that much of a chore to watch compared to some of the other, you know, long TV shows that we've seen in the past. The Eddie Jericho match was great. Most of the matches were just kind of there, nothing really to speak about. But I'll say that the show never really dragged for me. So I don't know, give it maybe 6 out of 10.
I'll go 5. I especially the tag match with Jericho and Eddie against Chavo and Malenko. That was a lot of fun that they actually did get some time for. Nothing too big on this particular Nitro, either negative or positive. Some here, some there. We'll go to the message board right now and get people's thoughts on the Goldberg-Regal match.
We should give out the Scott Putski Award.
Were our candidates? I mean, certainly Scott Steiner.
I'm surprised Scott Steiner hasn't won as much as he should have.
I'm still going to put both Hogan and Savage in there.
Okay.
Definitely. Bagwell was on this show, albeit very brief.
Don't really count.
Yeah, he would go on to bigger and bigger. I mean, Luger we kind of have thrown out. I would not put... I think those are our candidates.
Okay.
I mean, Eddie was pretty shredded at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Those would be, I think, the standouts in the Scott Putski department. I mean, you... Who literally jumped out of the screen for you?
For me, I have to say Scott Steiner.
Yeah, he was a bulky individual in 1998. It was only going to get bigger. So this was a precursor to the heel turn and where the inflation would really take off. So mm-hmm. Scott Steiner, Scott Putski Award winner, official.
Congratulations.
Yes, he's, I'm sure, touched.
Add that to the list, Brad.
Add it
to the list.
Our first piece of feedback is from Matt in suburban Detroit. Always fun trying to review a hard-to-find show. I noticed in my search that the next week, Crush, Bryan Adams debuted in WCW, and that in 5 months, we get the iconic Goldberg versus Scott Putski match. When I saw the Wikipedia lineup for the show, I was excited. Glacier, the Steiners, A and Way, Ultimo Dragon, and Macho Man all on this one card. How could this not be a train wreck? Just a general question from that time period. The way WCW misused a guy like Bret Hart, was this war doomed to fail for WCW? I would say absolutely not. I think you look at this lineup of talent you had. To your point, a lot of it misused. But, God, WCW had every advantage in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Huge television exposure,
money.
Stars, money, work rate. Everything was in their favor. I mean, man, this thing seemed like... This thing could have gone on forever.
Mm-hmm.
You cycle in your new talent on top. You give meaningful stuff to the undercard, and it could have been a never-ending cycle for these folks. But 1998 was the crumbling, and 98 was the implosion, and 2000 was just the funeral.
Christian Small, personally, I'd like to side with Regal's point of view of the match. However, having just watched it again, it does look like Regal is adding a few extra shots here and there, especially that kick to the back, and then there's a little kick to the face after the schoolboy. However, as Austin mentioned on his podcast, Regal is a stiff worker, and it can often help the match. I also find it interesting listening to both men's views of it now. Regal hates talking about it, and Goldberg seemingly won't let it go, even... He even threw a little dig at Regal on last week's Art of Wrestling podcast.
Oh, well there. Next up we have...
Ronaldo
from Milan, Italy. Well, Regal wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer back then due to his drug issues, and Goldberg was. Goldberg. So it was pretty much a recipe for disaster. If anything, Bill showed he had nice MMA skills, albeit inside of a predetermined sport environment.
James in Edmonton... The match was what it was. You had Goldberg, who was still very green at the time, and Regal, who mostly likely had his own demons at the time, so I don't think it was as bad as some people make it out to be. What I couldn't get over was the commentary trying to get Goldberg over and explaining Regal's strategy. Today, if a match like that occurred, Vince would probably be telling Cole and JBL to bury both men, and they would be making fun of the match and calling out how bad it is. I was never a big Schiavone fan, but he tried during this match because WCW was trying to build Goldberg and make money with him. Well, what a novel concept. I'll never understand making fun of people you pay and who can make you more money.
All right. Brad from Whitby. I was able to find this full episode and tried to upload it to YouTube, but there were copyright issues after I uploaded it for 8 hours overnight. Sorry, guys. I hope while watching this, you guys got a laugh from the horrible video package WCW was using at this time. They resembled something from a high school AV class. I don't really know who is to blame for the horrible match between Regal and Goldberg, but whatever was going on, these two men simply weren't on the same page. You could tell both were getting upset and were maybe taking some aggression out on one another. This match even threw Tony Schiavone off his game. He didn't once mention the Hogan Savage match coming up. Speaking of Tony, did you guys hear him correct Tanay on how a STF is actually applied? This Nitro showed what WCW's strength was, the undercard. The Jericho-Eddie tag team was the definite standout. Just for the undercard, I give this a 7 out of 10. Plus, it had the NWO dropping a cartoon-style net on Sting. Awesome.
We go to Chris from Carlisle, England. Given the hype over this match, I honestly didn't think there was all that much of a problem. I've seen guys taken advantage of in a lot worse situations than this, and other than a couple of the kicks from Regal, it was about as solid a match as I've seen Goldberg have at that stage of his career. A lot of fuss over nothing in my book.
If you want to see something times 10, Perry Saturn, Mike Bell, yeah, from an episode of Metal in 2001. I mean, that was, I would say, criminal.
Yeah.
Next up is Mike from Port Hope, Ontario. First off, why, when watching shows like UFC Unleashed and other countdown shows produced by the UFC exclusively on the... Okay, so this, does this have anything to do with this particular episode? Let's ask this question. Let's see what he has to say. They blur out random sponsors on fighters' trunks on the octagon posts and even the canvas. Why do they do this? Because they have no relationship with said sponsor, and they don't want to advertise them on their programming from years back when they would have paid a sponsorship fee to get onto that broadcast.
In particular, I noticed it with the Strikeforce footage,
yep,
when they blur out like Rockstar.
Yep.
And that was obviously a deal that it wasn't with the UFC. It was with another company. Why are we talking about this?
I don't know, but he also wants to know your favorite Degrassi character.
Okay.
I never watched Degrassi, to be honest, so I know that's sacrilege in Canada.
Oh, I love that girl with the that punk girl. What's her name? The girl with that funny hair.
I know who you're talking about, but I was not a Degrassi watcher, so I'm sure I will.
What the fuck is her name?
Started with an S, didn't it?
No. Okay, whatever.
You should have just said Wheels. You should have just gone with a name you knew.
Oh, man, I don't like Wheels. He's a little dick. Okay.
Spike!
No, not Spike. Spike's friend.
Oh, then I don't know it at all. Okay. You continue, Way. I think we have one more.
We go to Bill from Hamilton. After watching the Goldberg-Regal match yet again and hearing both men's assessment of the situation, it just seems Regal is working the style he usually works. While Goldberg makes it sound like the incident was on par with Inoki kicking the great Antonio into unconsciousness.
Oh, that's another one to watch. Holy shit.
What was that? When did that take place?
I don't know if that's on New Japan World, but you can certainly find it on YouTube. It is Inoki in there with the great Antonio, who, let's just say, not a great wrestler. Inoki beats the fuck out of this particular individual.
God.
That is, I mean, the two instances we just gave, Saturn, Mike Bell, and Inoki, and the great Antonio, you could not even compare them in relation to Goldberg Regal.
This was an interesting era for WCW. The WWE likes to spout out their revisionist BS on how WCW tanked because of the older guys taking the spotlight, when actually the match Hogan and Savage had it uncensored drew a huge buy rate. But yet it's okay to put The Undertaker and Triple H on display in their 40s because their matches are better. Well, Savage and Hogan may not have had 4-star matches on par with their WWF battles, but wrestling first and foremost is about drawing money. However, with all that being said, WCW's problem was not knowing when to stop with the older guys, and had they given other talents such as Raven or Jericho or Booker to mix up with these guys in a significant program, it would have kept things fresh. Even Goldberg never had many big pay-per-view programs in his big run.
I get what he's saying. Hunter and Undertaker wouldn't be my comparison, though, I would use. I mean, it's not like those are weekly characters, and the two matches they did extremely well, not just because of them, but you also had the WrestleMania platform. But anyway, thank you, folks, for your questions and feedback. As we wrap up this week's show, Way, there is a new series you have been dying to sit down and watch, and we are going to review two episodes of said show next week.
That's right. I've actually like held off on watching this because I knew we were going to review it, but the new Japan shows on Access TV, hosted by Mauro Ranallo and Josh Barnett. I'm very much looking forward to watching, and I've been hearing great, incredible reviews about the commentary on these shows. So we'll be reviewing episodes 2 and 3. And do you know the matches?
Yes. On episode 2, it's Okada against Hiroki Goto, and then Shinsuke Nakamura, Tomohiro Ishii, and Jado taking on Minoru Suzuki, Lance Archer, and Taka Michinoku. And then the episode 3, that's the episode that has gotten incredible reviews. So much, I'm going to go and rewatch this for next week. It is the entire match between Hiroshi Tanahashi and Okada from Invasion Attack 2013. And it is out of this world. So,
cool.
Spoiler, I'm going to like episode 3, even at second viewing. So,
I'm very excited. Which one was the episode Dave Meltzer said was the best TV show?
Episode
3.
Seen?
Oh, wow. That's huge praise.
So episode 2 and 3 next week, folks. If you can track them down, that is what we will be discussing next week. And we can open it up as well on questions, which we're trying to do right now. If you want to ask stuff about New Japan, if you're getting into it of late with this show or with New Japan World, we've got the new beginning cards coming up later on this month. We can make it a New Japan-focused show next week on Review Away. So that should be a lot of fun. We'll chat with you then.
Liz O'Rourke is my favorite Degrassi character.
Oh, okay then. Well, there. The answer to the biggest question of the day from Wei Ting. You can go to liveaudiowrestling.com, check out all of our shows. The Law from Sunday Night is up, featuring my chat with Dana White, as well as Mouth's interview with the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. We have Review of Raw from Monday Night, chatting Raw, and Triple H's interview with Steve Austin that Wei Ting had lots of thoughts to share with.
It.
So we will be back later this week. We've got What's Next coming at you on Thursday. New Baron Pollock will be up later today. Friday, MMA Report, and then Saturday, Review and Impact 2 Electric Boogaloo with Brian Mann and Nate Milton. I have not heard their feedback on us using the new graphic, but Wei Ting said it was a must.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think it's an awesome
graphic. That was from Warren Isles, who's actually made a number of our t-shirt designs.
Warren, he made action figures as well.
Did he?
He's made action figures in the past.
Oh, yeah. He used to make them.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if
very talented
does.
Individual yeah. and the creator of the artwork for Review and Impact 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
I laugh every time I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is our show Saturday nights. And then, of course, The Law Sunday nights, 11 Eastern, at Way0937 on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow us at Law Radio.
When are you going to jump on Instagram?
You know what?
You have a new phone. You have no excuse now.
I have an idea for Instagram.
Okay.
I just have to actually execute it.
What's the idea?
I needed to find a reason to have Instagram.
Okay. Well, tell us about your idea.
Way. You dangle. You anticipate.
Oh, my.
You deliver. And you succeed.
Okay.
All right. We're going out with some Degrassi. We will chat with you later.
Nice.
Last summer, remember? We decided to use the king-size condom, the one that slipped off. I'm pregnant.